something outside.
What is that?
Radio.
And welcome everybody to another episode of Monster X Radio. Shane Corson here. Monster X Radio is brought to you by Sasquatch Coffee. Have you tried it? Yeti. And today we are going to be talking Bigfoot. Bigfoot in Montana. And more specifically, we're going to cover the Big Sky Conference being held in Montana, in Hamilton. It's the third annual and only Bigfoot Conference in Montana, held September 22nd and 23rd. I'm bringing aboard here Thomas Ertz and Tom Broadhead to talk about the Big Sky Conference. It's like I said, it's in its third year. And it's got a big lineup, as it has from day one, a lot of great speakers, a lot of stuff to cover, and what a fantastic state, Montana, one of my favorite states, and these guys are in the middle of it all, and they're bringing to the public a chance to check out what's going on in Montana and why Montana, and bringing in some great, great speakers. So I'm going to bring in Thomas and Tom. Welcome, guys, to the show.
Thanks, Shane.
Hi, Shane. How you doing?
Doing well, guys. Thank you. Thank you for joining me. I love conferences and seminars and whatnot. This particular conference is something special. But before we get into the conference and how it came about and whatnot, I'll start with Thomas. Thomas, can you just give the audience a little lowdown on yourself, and then we'll get to Tom.
Sure, Shane. I'm from Washington State originally. Grew up believing in Bigfoot, watching all the Bigfoot shows when I was little. Started out with the wife after a video that a family member had recorded. Started there, networked into the BFRO, moved to Montana, and have been going strong with it ever since.
Fantastic. Tom, I know, Tom, you're from Montana. You do a ton of traveling. You've been just about everywhere. You're kind of crazy that way. But, you know, I've come to know you, and I hold a high respect for you. And so, you know, for the listening audience, can you just give a brief description of your involvement with the Bigfoot world and a little bit about yourself?
Sure thing. Shane, thank you for the kind words. Basically, I grew up in New York, and I first got started with the Bigfoot thing. I read it in Boy's Life. I think I was probably in fifth grade or something, and it just kind of lit a fire. It smoldered a little. Back in the 70s, there was a lot going on in New York, so I kind of got into that, and then it kind of sat for a while. But when my wife and I moved to Montana, I picked it up again. Then I started to go out to the West Coast. I met all you guys, had a wonderful time, and there's some really wonderful people out there. Learned a whole lot and just brought all that learning back here and applied it to trying to just decipher reports and stuff in Montana, and it's been quite an experience.
I'm sure it has, it's been a pleasure. Unfortunately, I've never had the opportunity, and I'm going to make sure I fix that to meet Thomas, but I haven't met you, Tom, and I've done a lot of in the field research with you and gotten to know you. So it's been a pleasure, and but let's get to the Big Sky Conference. You know, the Big Sky Conference held in Montana. How did this come to be, and how successful has it been? Now, we're going into the third year. You got a fantastic lineup. So How did this conference come to be? What was the idea behind it? What are your thoughts about where you want to take it, and who are some of the speakers? You know, just take the floor.
So this all started back 3 years ago with Sarah doing the initial year up in the Flathead Lake area. Flathead Lake is a beautiful area. The location was a little small for the first year. A lot of people showed up. The second year is when we stepped up and started to present with these great group of people. So Hamilton offers a beautiful area. You have the Bitterroot Mountains on the west, the Anaconda Range to the south, the Sapphire Mountains to the east, and you go up the Bitterroot Valley up past Missoula, and you're in mountains. Some of the speakers we have this year are some really great guys. Of course, as always, the awesome Dr. Jeff Meldrum out of ISU. We have people such as Seth Breedlove from Ford. Is from Ohio. We also have the Ape Canyon and the Boggy Creek Monster video showing in Missoula that Thursday night before conference. Some of the other people that we really do have coming through that are going to be kind of a shocker this year, we actually got Bob Gimlin coming with Russell Accord. So that's a pretty cool deal, you know, to get Bob back, have him be there on the 50th year. It just, that anniversary is a big milestone for the community and everybody around. But last year we probably hit about 200 people for the weekend. This year we're looking at more people coming. The cool thing about being in Hamilton is the amazing setting at the Bitterroot Inn and Conference Center. You have just beautiful mountains all the way around. We're really hoping to keep this pushing forward in the area of research, family-oriented. This year, we're kind of going a little bit above from what we did last year with casting classes for kids to play dirt and learn how to make a cast of any track that you can find. And we're going to have the Raleigh County Fair hoping to get people out there too to actually turn around and come to our conference. So this year is packing a lot into it in a short amount of time, and it's going to be a blast. We're hoping maybe to have the same amount, maybe a little bit more coming in.
Fantastic. You know, some of your speakers, one of them particularly stands out. I mean, obviously you got Bob Gimlin there. It's the 50th anniversary. That is outstanding. And for those of you who have not had a chance to meet Bob Gimlin, I can't recommend and tell you enough. You got to meet the guy, and you'll get a better feel of what really transpired there in October of 1967 with the film. You're going to have that opportunity at this conference. But Mark Marcel, Ape Canyon, he's a good friend of mine. I've done a lot of field work with him. He's not necessarily a Bigfoot researcher. He's a Bigfoot historian. He really gets into the Bigfoot attacks or supposed Bigfoot attacks, and one of the ones he took on was Ape Canyon. And I managed to convince him to take me out to the possible cabin location. And I say possible, well, I'm pretty dang sure he's located the actual cabin. Whether or not the 1924 Ape Canyon attack really occurred or not, and I think it did, but he has located the cabin. He is a fantastic speaker and so knowledgeable and so personable. People are going to be enthralled with his presentation. He's a great public speaker, I hope to make it this year because every time he speaks, I want to be there. Now, you have other speakers there. Like we said, Jeff Meldrum, and also you two. What are some of the things Tom and Thomas, you guys are going to be discussing, because you're in the thick of it there in Montana, and you know, what should people expect coming from your mouth?
Well, I think we're going to, what we did last year was basically we did the BFRO in Montana. This year I think we'll change it a little, you know, depending on, you know, Tom and I are still talking about it, but From my point of view, I'm thinking maybe some more, you know, personal anecdotes, listening to stories, you know, explaining the reports we've gotten, because we've gotten some really good ones over the last year, and they are fascinating. You know, and then maybe just, I'm thinking almost just a few minutes on if you, you know, because Tom and I certainly are not, we're not scientists or anything. We're just, you know, amateur researchers, which is what majority of the audience is anyway. And I think they would probably appreciate someone just talking like, you know, if you want to go out, just go out, you know, go out in the woods, take a walk, let them follow you back, things like that. You know, instead of going out and hooting and hollering and banging sticks, you know, just, you know, we're going to give them a little different approach, I think. At least that's what I'm headed for.
Yeah.
Just to add to that, and last year we didn't really touch much on it. It was a brief glimpse into what Tom and I had done last year prior to conference.
Yep.
We had an actual indication. We actually had an interaction that was pretty interesting in the middle, at the end of July, so about a week ago, a year now, that
yeah.
was really cool just outside of where I'm living, up around the Phillipsburg, Anaconda area. And those type of situations, like Tom said, is just walking around, not making a lot of noise, just being there and experiencing the nighttime activity of the mountains and the woods can garner a lot of activity real quickly.
You know, and in the afternoon, we had just decided, it was a beautiful afternoon, we decided to take a walk, and we're just walking through the woods, and I heard something that sounded like a little rock clack. And I said to Tom, oh, did you hear that? And he goes, oh, yeah, probably the wind in the trees. And then we heard it again a couple minutes later. So I had two rocks with me because I always walk around with two rocks just to do a little clacking thing because I'm not into swinging like Babe Ruth onto trees and stuff. I hit the two rocks together. About 10 seconds later, I heard a boom. We hit it. We heard two coming back. I said, oh, that's interesting. And then we waited a minute or so, hit it again, and same thing, same 10 seconds later, we got the same reaction again. So rather than keep doing it until whatever we was doing it got bored, we said, oh, good enough. You know, that's but that's the kind of things that can happen to you if you're actually paying attention. And, you know, paying attention in the woods is 95% of what this whole thing's about. You know, being
absolutely.
Aware of your surroundings and stuff. So
yeah, absolutely. And just being in the woods, you know, paying attention,
yeah,
but you have to be in the woods to actually
right.
possibly experience some of this stuff, you know. That's funny you mention that because one of the things about conferences in general, and specifically this conference, is there's a lot of people that can't physically or sometimes mentally make it into the woods. They don't want to. But here's a conference, the Big Sky Conference, where people can engage other researchers and other pieces of possible evidence, whether it's anecdotal or physical. And this conference is going to lay it out for them in a great venue, in a great area.
Yeah.
And you do
yeah.
have the possibility, you know, getting out there. One of the key things I think for a successful conference is placing that conference in an area where, you know, if you're coming from out of state, you know, you got this venue and you got a couple of days to spend there and interact with people. But, you know, some people, you know, take their vacation and go, okay, well, I'm going to head out, you know, especially out of towners. I'm going to head to this conference and, well, what else, you know, I'm going to be 2 days to this conference. Then what I do or what I do before or after.
Yeah.
Right in this area, you're going to be able to go right out and get into the middle of it. And you're going to have experienced researchers that can point you in the right direction, can share some of their experiences and encounters, the best hot spots to go to. And for me, that makes for a really good conference. And I know you guys are going to provide that stuff as well as others. I mean, that's important, I believe. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Well,
I have to,
sorry.
I'm sorry, Tom.
The cool thing about this area in Hamilton. I've actually got my maps out, and I'm looking at it. The maps that I have taken and jotted down all of the known and researched sightings and incidents in Montana. And I'm looking right now at Hamilton. To the east, you have the Sapphire Mountains. There's easily four or five incidents within about a 20 to a 30-minute drive outside of Hamilton to the east.
Wow.
So that's a pretty hefty area to be in, and it's a thick wooded area. There's extreme terrain. There's a lot of nooks and crannies that you can drive to on a dirt road and never hit a gate. And then you can go over into the Selway Bitterroot Wilderness area, which is Idaho-Montana border, and that is some of the ruggedest terrain out there. If you're at the conference this year and you look out to the west outside, you see how steep it immediately gets. It takes less than 5 to 10 miles, and you're in some of the steepest terrain that western Montana has to offer. And there's a lot of reports out of that area, too. So to have it where we do, you're very well clustered for a Bigfoot outing if you decide to do that, just like you said, Shane.
Hmm. Oh, fantastic. Tom, did you have something to say to that? Or?
Oh, no. I was just going to add that we also had Misty Alba and Becky Cook.
Yeah,
that are going to be at the conference. And Misty's been all over. She's written two books. She's fabulous to deal with. And Becky's from Idaho. She's a Shoshone Indian. And she really has some interesting theories and stuff. And she's a fascinating person. And she's got two books, and she's working on her third.
Yeah,
and
we've had Misty on the show before, and
I
got a chance at the International Bigfoot Conference held in Kennewick, Washington, which is coming up this year. I had a chance to speak alongside her, and what a talented and smart individual that I appreciated. Everything she had to say. So very talented and very thought-provoking in a lot of ways. You guys also have Joe Hauser. He's a wildlife biologist, environment consultant. I mean, what a fantastic guy. He was at Beachfoot this year, and every year I get the chance to mingle with him and talk with him. He's good friends with Ron Moorhead, and he's got a lot of experience, especially hiking, like, say, the Glacier National Park area. So what a lineup. Fantastic.
Yeah, it is a really good lineup, and I think everyone's going to really enjoy it. And, you know, and with Montana also, you know, if you're a fly fisherman, you know, this is the place to be. So on top of everything else, the Bitterroot's right out the back door.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if you know anything about fly fishing there, Tom, but just joking.
I know.
Yeah, no, that's you're obviously a fly fisherman and a guide, I believe. So that's you know what you're talking about there. And Montana is one of the top states to fly fish, and a lot of encounters happen while you're out camping or fishing. So, let's get into the state of Montana. You know, this conference is obviously in Montana. I don't think a lot of people. Let me just say this. So, Montana, for those that are not aware, is the 44th in population in size wise. It's a fourth. 44th in population in the United States. It's also fourth in size in the United States, which is tremendous. Up to the north, you have British Columbia, Alberta, and Saskatchewan. You have it borders North Dakota and South Dakota to the east, Wyoming to the south, and Idaho to the west. Idaho gets a little bit more attention than some of those other states, I think even including Montana. Why it is, I'm not exactly sure. There's been some, you know, YouTube videos, this and that. Montana is immense. And you guys, the small group of you guys, you know, you guys are involved with the BFRO, and there's a few others researching the Montana. It is unbelievable. If there's something unknown, like a Sasquatch, which I know to be, Montana's a perfect state. So let's talk a little bit about Montana. And why Sasquatch would be in some of these areas, and let's get you guys' opinion as to why Sasquatch would be there. And we can start with you, Tom, and then we'll get you, Thomas.
Well, you know, I mean, the habitat is perfect. You know, even though everyone says Montana winters and stuff are really bad, they're really not as bad as everybody says. But don't tell anybody that. You know, it's not as cold as everybody says, and we don't get the snow. There's lots of water. There's a ton. There's so much elk. There's deer. Everything to eat. Even where I am in Livingston, you're 45 minutes from Yellowstone Park. It's a pretty and it's desolate. You know, I mean, you can walk out your back door. I can look out my back window, and see an 8,000 acre ranch that goes as far as I can see. So there's plenty of room. Nobody. Honestly, even I think people don't believe there's Bigfoot in Montana. They just, they'd say 9 times out of 10, they'd see a big furry thing. They'd say, oh, it's a bear. And that would be it. So, but food, water, shelter, I mean, there's, you know, and there are relatively mild temperatures, especially around the rivers and stuff. So I think that has a lot to do with it. Tom's area up north, I'm covering the reports down south. He's covering the north end. But majority of the reports seem to come from up where he is, up in the really, really desolate part of Montana where there's no one. So I think he could do a pretty good discussion of that.
Yeah, yeah. Thomas, why is Sasquatch, why would Sasquatch be in Montana? You know, same question to you.
Well, the big thing that I don't think a lot of people understand about Montana, you have to realize that most of Western Montana, even all of Montana, is a huge mining industry. We're talking from the early 1800s all the way up to today. You can go back on some of these back roads, and you can find some old, closed down mines that are right into the cliff face. The old copper ore, zinc, silver, gold. So, if you're an animal and you're looking for shelter during the winter, somebody's already dug you a hole. Why spend the time to build a shelter or dig a hole? So, the terrain gives an exquisite area to hide out in, because you can take one road, but the next road may not be for 4 or 5 miles over 10 ridges. So there's a lot of open area where people really aren't. In my area around Butte, I step out my door, I look at 3 different mountain ranges from my doorstep. We're talking mountain ranges that are over in the Big Sky, Lone Peak area. We're talking mountains down to the south around Dillon. These mountains are ranging anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 feet in elevation, depending on which ones you're looking at. But the biggest thing, like Tom said, is food concentration in these areas. A lot of these creeks and lakes have a huge population of fish. The elk populations out here in Montana are enormous. The deer, just every living animal out here share such an incredible area. Why wouldn't you be out here? You've got a food source to sustain a very large animal throughout the year with minimal movement, really. It creates a perfect habitat, just like Washington does, with a lot of that terrain change, the growth that promotes on the underside of the canopies that bring up the mushrooms and all that. We get that in Western Montana a lot. You're looking at a continental divide that really is Western Montana down into the south. There are some peaks up around the Great Falls area out in Fort Peck. But Western Montana has some of the best habitat for people like Tom, myself, and the other people in Montana doing research that I can drive from Butte to Hamilton, and I never have to touch pavement.
Mm-hmm.
Never. I can be on the back roads, up mountains, and never have to stop. It's just a beautiful area to be in. It's a great research area. yeah, there are, everybody's going to have their ups and downs on where to be, but if you come to conference and you look at these maps that I have set up, you can see where these pockets are residing, and some of these areas I've been into, there's no one there. You're talking, you're 20 miles away from the nearest house, and hard, you know, you may get 100 to 200 people a week cutting through that area just while driving.
Right.
So,
yeah,
you've got a lot of area to be without being messed with.
Well, yeah, and that speaks to the size of Montana. Once again, like I said, it's fourth in size in the U.S. with such a small population with tremendous amounts of wilderness areas, you know, and you have known animals like the grizzly and other animals in this area that survive there year-round. So winter, for me, does not really play a part, especially if you're living in this environment year-round. And then, of course, like I said, to the north, you know, you have 545 miles of border with, you know, three Canadian provinces, British Columbia, Alberta, and Saskatchewan, which have a tremendous amount of reports historically and even nowadays. You know, I'm of the opinion that Sasquatch is fairly nomadic and travels, you know, but I don't think there's any real reason for Sasquatch, if it resides in Montana, to leave Montana per se. But if it's traveling around, you have all these different areas to travel to, but you have sustainable resources. Like you mentioned, you got the elk and the fish and the natural fauna. Montana's a truly an amazing state, and it's, you know, I can only imagine the amount of work and time you guys spend because, you know, there's just really a handful of researchers researching Montana. And you still have a tremendous amount of history and current reports that pour into you guys, whether it's on the BFRO or not. And to me, Montana stands out big time. You know, I'm here in Washington. You know, I spent a lot of time in Oregon. I'll be honest, in Northern California, there's a ton of researchers out this way. I always look. Montana has always been on my horizon as a great state. So, it's hard for me to fathom. Tom, before we got on air, we were talking about the size of Montana. You mentioned reference to Texas.
Right, yeah. If the distance from southern Montana to Texas is shorter than the distance from southern Montana to the top of northern Montana. So it's a pretty amazing thing. I don't know how many, it's hundreds of miles. I forget the exact number. But if you can drive to Texas easier, then you can drive to the top of Montana. So, and then going across is the same thing. It's a 16-hour drive to go from one end to the other. So, it's incredible. It's a beautiful state. You never get tired of it. They say big sky, and until you've actually seen it, you really can't comprehend it.
Exactly. Montana is a state unto itself, obviously, but that much more so if you're involved in any sort of wildlife research and even Sasquatch research. It is an amazing state. And, of course, the Big Sky Conference is going to, facilitate people getting around an area amongst speakers and sharing some of the evidence, anecdotal stuff, and physical stuff, and getting to be amongst these guys that are boots on the ground, that are taking reports and looking for stuff. Let's get into a little bit of Montana's history with Bigfoot and Sasquatch. Whether it's historically speaking, or current stuff. I love hearing anecdotal stories, reports. I know you guys have some. I know you guys have collected some.
Yep.
What are some of the reports that you've taken in or read or been shared with that really stand out in your mind?
Well, Thomas, you want to go first? Or?
I'll go first. This is the first report Katie and I did for the BFRO, and it's taken just north of Helena on the Missouri River area. The report number is 48616, And this happens to be a former Special Forces guy. He did military guard up at Maelstrom Air Force Base in Great Falls. He went and dropped his daughter off for the bus for school early in the morning. We're talking roughly about 7:20 in the morning. So, and this actually took place in May of 2015. So what you're looking at that time of year is at 7:20, the sun is just starting to come up. You've got a lot of pockets of shadow steel and some sunlight. As he dropped his daughter off and was coming back on the dirt road, he's up above another road that goes down below him and makes a turn, and it's grassy, kind of open. And out of the corner of his eye, he sees movement. A dark figure crossing the road. And in the 3 seconds that he saw this, and he actually turned and looked at it, he got a great picture image of what it was. Now, he went another 100 yards. By that time, the hill right that he was driving on changed enough that he lost view. And when he came back to the next spot that he could see down to the corner, this figure was gone. So we do our BFRDO. We get a hold of him. We set up a time to go meet him and everything. So we make the drive up there. Katie, my wife, stays with the witness. I drive down in my pickup, and I park on the exact corner where he saw this figure. And he goes, "Well, I know it wasn't a person." And my wife, Katie, goes, "Well, what do you mean?" He goes, "Whatever it was much taller and bigger than your husband." Now, I stand 6'1", 6'2". I'm roughly about 30 inches wide at the shoulder. And I'm about 265, 270. So doing this recreate and talking to him, he tells my wife, "Well, whatever it was at least another foot and a half, 2 foot taller than your husband. And much, much wider." The reason why we say much wider is because the way the creature was moving, he had a rock to a shoulder. So you could actually see the shoulder swing and see each shoulder present widthwise to him from his pickup in the brief seconds he saw this. The most incredible thing is, I asked him what the size looked like to my pickup height-wise. He goes, "Whatever it was still another foot and a half taller than my pickup." Now, I drive an F-150 four-door, so no lift, no nothing. So a stock F-150, that gives you an idea of how tall this creature had to have been walking across this road. And he didn't know what he was looking at. He wanted an answer. He's heard some weird things around his property. The area where this happened has numerous reports. It's actually one of the few tight-knit clusters in Montana. And these range back 10, 15 years, spread out through X amount of time up to now, still going on in that area. So it's a very unique sighting. It's a very unique area to be in because you're right on that border of heading out to Great Falls and into the plains. You get a sense that whatever was there was making a crossing through the mountains in and out of wherever it was pulling out or homing in an area. It's a very amazing sighting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this is a retired Special Forces guy. This is, this I would assume is a trained observer. And those are reports that I really key in on, that I really hunker down. I was up at the Olympic Project's expedition this past weekend, and I got to hear a story from a former Marine that floored me, a guy that quite honestly did not want to share his encounter. And his encounter was viewed by by about six individuals in his platoon. And it was amazing to hear in person, and obviously a trained observer in an area. It was North Carolina, and he was – as a Marine, you know, this guy's seen combat. He's, you know, he's retired now and everything, but his detail was tremendous. And this is not an encounter or a story you're going to hear anywhere. And so those are the ones I really key on. I've not heard this particular what you described right now, Thomas, anywhere. Are those reports that you really key on? I mean, this guy seems very credible. I mean, what was your thoughts when he was reliving what he saw?
Well, I wasn't there with the initial recreation.
Right.
The big key for me was a trained observer, like you said, somebody that has to recognize what they're seeing in an instant and make a decision on what's going to happen. People like that tend to be the most perfect person. This is another one that is an ongoing investigation, an ongoing area of research that is private property. The husband and wife, the husband is a former police officer. Once again, trained to observe in an incident and figure out what he needs to do. And this is just outside of where I'm living in Butte. Him and his wife walked up to another part of their property and saw one crouched down behind a tree. Well, the thing that he didn't realize where he saw this creature right behind the tree is a game trail, an active game trail. And we did the recreate. It was partially hidden behind the tree, but where the shoulder that he saw in the height that a crouch position, even myself, was still another size of me up. So we're talking something in the 8-foot range. So that happened. We talked to him in August or July. I went out there after Labor Day weekend being in Washington doing a trip out there with my aunt and uncle and a great friend of ours between the two of us, Shane Kirk Brandenburg. So I come back to the property. I stayed out there through the night, and I told him, well, if you see a light come down the road, it's me. I'm walking down. I'm going to just walk the road back and forth doing a night walk. All right, no big deal. Perfect lighting, perfect everything to do this. Didn't really need a headlamp for any sort of walking light. I get roughly halfway to the house, and the next thing I know, their dogs are barking aggressively towards something in the property. They are going berserk. These dogs were out to protect the property and the other farm animals that were there. As I get closer to the house and see the house, I see the wife come out, and I said, hey, it's just me, Thomas. She goes, okay, yeah, the dogs never do this. They never act this way. This is not them. I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to continue walking in, and I'm going to pan around with my night vision a lot and really see if I can't see anything. Maybe it could be a wolf, could be a bear. I don't know. So as I start getting closer to the house, one of the dogs is there, and it realizes who I am. I've met the dog a couple times, and this dog just starts wagging its tail, is happy to see me. And I know it was not me that the dogs were barking at, because I was still too far away for them. And I get up into the yard, and there's the one other dog is still growling, is still upset, and I could visually see this dog shaking. And I'm like, well, that's kind of weird. And they have geese, turkeys, and chickens. So I'm standing out kind of in this little part of the yard, and I'm standing there panning around with my night vision, pulling it down every once in a while, let my eyes readjust just to see if I can't see any movement. Well, up on the hill to the west, probably about 150 feet above me and less than 100 yards away, is this little group of trees, and you can see underneath this one. Well, and I looked up there. Nothing up there. All right. So I keep looking around. And as I come back to this area, something's blocking one of the trees. Now, I know that I had just looked there and I could see through this tree with the backlight from the moon. And I'm like, well, that's weird. At the same time, I see a figure turn to its left and take a step and disappear back up behind some more trees. Well, my first thought is, well, this is interesting. I'm thinking it could have been an elk, could have been anything at this point. But something didn't sit right with me with the way it moved. So I was like, all right, whatever. I'll hang around a little bit more, see if anything else happens. By that time, the dog, after I saw whatever it was turn and leave, the dog that was shaking and still growly stops, settles down, and is completely relaxed. No problem whatsoever. I'm like, yeah, that's really weird. But I don't know what this figure was. The tree that is overhanging would have blocked about right at the top of the shoulders up to the head. I'm like, well, this could be a bear standing weird or however it's positioned. You know, I don't really know what that up there looks like. I'm like, well, in the morning, I'll walk up there. I'll take some photos of the area and really show where this figure was standing. Go back, go to sleep, come back, get there right at sunbreak. And I'm looking around, walk up there, and I'm going, something doesn't fit right for a bear to have been standing there on its hind legs and then turn and walk away because of how uneven this ground was. We're talking some broken up rock, rocky terrain, and a lot of brush, a lot of undergrowth brush that for a standard black bear, which the height could have been correct for, would have had a hard time standing there. And it just still leaves a lingering feeling. Okay, what was it that I really saw? Was it a bear? The one thing I do know it was not an elk, because the body proportionate and the way it turned was wrong. If it was an elk that had turned and walked away from me, I should have seen that elongated body following with the, and I did not see that. So it's left to speculation, but from the reports out of this general area, which there's one from the 80s, Kiz, and then another one not too far away, is the credibility there? Yes. But is a definitive answer there? No. The sad part is I had taken my night vision down and didn't have a recording, so I'll never truly know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate that because you're not definitively stating anything, and I think that's important to note. I think I admire researchers that unless it's, they've had this sighting, absolute clear sighting, as long as they stick to the facts, I have no problem with that. And it sounds like, it definitely sounds like exactly what you're doing here. Before I get to Tom, though, is there any other anecdotal stories that you have taken over that stick out in your head in the state of Montana? Anything like that?
The ones that do, Tom has taken over control of Acunum, and they're from our last year's conference that we gathered. He's got a couple great ones that I know he's probably dying to share. So I'll let Tom take it.
Okay.
All right, Shane, ready?
I'm ready. I think we're ready.
Okay. All righty. BFRO got this past February, they got a call from a gentleman from Alabama. He said that he had a report. He just wanted to talk to somebody about it. So I said, okay, but I'm not in Alabama, but the report was from Montana because he was up here elk hunting. So I got him on the phone and got talking to him, and it was probably one of the most fascinating reports and detailed I've ever heard. He was in the Big Baldy Mountains, middle of the state, about 8,000 feet elevation, in the Lewis and Clark National Forest. He was elk hunting with a friend of his. He was spotter. And the other guy had the rifle. The weather was overcast, a little bit of snow, but it was pretty clear. They're working their way up the side of a mountain, and there's like a little meadow with a tree line. And they got to the tree line, and they're standing there. And they're just looking, don't see too much, and his friend has to use the facilities. So he took the rifle with him, went down the hill a little bit, and Johnny's just standing there looking around, admiring the scenery, looking for elk. And he said all of a sudden, from out of the tree line, this creature walked out and stood there and stared at him. And he said he was probably no more than 20 feet from this, that's what floored me. And he said they just stood there and watched each other for probably about 5 minutes. He's saying, and this may sound like I'm reading, but there's so much detail. He said it was seven and a half feet tall. He estimated 450 pounds. The shoulders were 36 to 40 inches wide. appeared to be a male. Hair was rusty black, 4 to 6 inches long. Neck muscles that went from the back of its neck to almost the corner of the shoulders. Conical shape, little knoll on the head. He said the face was rectangular, shaped 10 to 12 inches tall, 6.5 to 7 inches wide. The chance to do this was incredible. He said the forehead and jaw were the same width. Got a profile once, and it appeared to have a flat face. There was no hair on his face. Palm of his hands, facial color was white. Let's see, what else has he got? Oh, my gosh. He said it had small lips, 3 to 4 inches wide, brown eyes, and he could see vapor coming out of the nose. I mean, this was so close. Two nostril holes, 1.5 inches above the lip, and hands had hair on top of the hands, and the nails were like a chisel shape, kind of clean, but and he could notice a bad smell. Said he observed it for 4 or 5 minutes, and it seemed as curious about him as he was about it. He said, I don't know what it was. When his buddy came back up the hill towards him, it looked over his shoulder, saw him coming up with the rifle, turned around and walked back into the tree line. When they got back, they walked over trees, and he said they found a series of footprints, probably, he said, about, they counted maybe up to 50. He didn't get a length or anything on the footprints or a stride length or anything. But what really impressed me was he had not told anybody. This was from 1976, and he'd sat on it for almost 40 years, and he was getting old, and he just wanted to tell somebody that would believe him. And you know, I spoke to him, and we spoke several times, and this sighting report I've ever seen. And, you know, when you talk to someone, you get that feeling, you know, this guy's is sincere. They're not trying to pull the wool over your eyes or anything. And there was just so much detail, and I really think it was a true story. I just it was
Tom,
an amazing thing to talk to
Tom,
and
let me
to
ask
hear.
You this. Yeah, Tom, let me ask you this. Was this guy in the crouch position the whole time he was viewing this thing?
No, he was standing up straight.
Okay. I know he's relieving himself. I wasn't sure if it was the number one or the number two.
He was not taking a whiz. He was just standing there while his buddy went down the hill with the rifle to take a whiz.
I got you.
And and so I have to assume, and I think he did also, that the creature didn't perceive any threat to him. So he just said, "Well, you know what? I think I'll just stand out here and see what's up." And they just stood looking at each other. He said, like a couple of kids sizing each other up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said it was an incredible experience, you know, and he had never told anyone. And he finally got around 40 years later to telling someone.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it usually happens with a hunter or something like that. They has this sort of, longer period of time to view, this unknown. Now, when you describe the face, You mentioned something about the lips and nose. Did he describe the – I mean, he saw this thing up close. That's tremendously close. The length of – you know, what, did he describe the length from the tip of the nose or the base of the nose to the lips?
Yeah, he said it was – let me see where it was. He said it was like an inch and a half, something like that.
Yeah.
He said it was an inch and a half.
Yeah, that stands out in my head because a lot of the up-close personal encounters that I've heard of and taken in over the years, there's that stands out in my head. It's something that when you see something of that nature up close, it stands out. And but the description overall, it's classic description for up-close personal encounter. Did he get the feeling, and I don't know if you asked this, did he get the feeling this was more human-like or more ape-like in appearance? I mean, what was his general – what was run through this man's head?
He wasn't thinking animal, to be honest. I don't think he was thinking animal. I don't know that he was thinking human, but I know he was thinking something that had more curiosity than, say, a bear or a gorilla or something standing. It was just – it seemed to just be studying him, he said. So I'd have to say yeah, he tilted more towards the human or, you know, relic hominid, whatever, you know,
right,
we'd like to call him. But, yeah, he said that the sense of curiosity was amazing. That it was as curious about him as he was about it, and neither one was afraid, which to me, I mean, you know, you've seen how many reports where someone turns around, they see something, and they're all of a sudden they're scared to death and they want to run and everything. But this was just, he said it was just a calm, like running into one of your neighbors or something, and we both were completely calm.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a pretty unique experience.
Well, I absolutely, and an amazing experience. And with him being, you know, they're all elk hunting. You know, I'm a hunter. I work with hunters, and these are guys that are looking for game, and they've hunted. They know they're really good at guesstimating sizes of things, especially up close. You know, they're you know, most hunters are looking for that pristine buck or elk or whatever, and this is a guy that really sized it up well. And you said between 450 to 500 pounds, or I believe.
Yeah, he said something like that. But, you know, as it seems like everybody underestimates the weight because there's no real way to, you know, twice the size of a human doesn't mean twice the weight. It's like, what is it, 8 times or something, I think.
Yeah. Well, the size, too, though, the size, you know, I usually, you know, your average person is really horrible at guesstimating a size of something, especially weight.
Right.
But when I hear a size like that, that's, in my mind, and I could be wrong, that is an acceptable weight. I know I've heard credible reports where Sasquatch is quite a bit larger. But that sounds like a really good size weight. You know, of course, you're talking about muscle or fat and the weight of that. I get that. Sounds really more plausible, you know, even if he's off by 100 pounds or so. That's a plausible size weight.
Yeah, especially coming from a hunter.
Exactly.
You know, so,
Yeah. So, now, with these reports, I mean, are you guys, you know, and if you have any more, please share anything that comes to mind that stands out, but With these reports that you've taken in, that you've read about, that you've studied, that you have gone out in the field and done some research on, are there any patterns you're seeing? Not just with the sightings and the descriptions of what people are witnessing, but the areas. Is there anything sticking out in your mind that you guys key in on?
Well, for me, you know, not really, honestly, because I see, you know, I'll read all the reports I can get my hands on just around everywhere, including the Pacific Northeast. And it seems like there's a general type of area, you know, wooded, little isolated things. But you know, they've been seen in so many different locations. You know, sometimes we'll just take one of the back roads up there and we'll just drive to the end and we'll hike a little bit. Or we'll, you know, just go and hang out for a while and see what happens. We have one we're doing now, which is in a valley up a way up a road, and it's the valley's actually been burned out. So you'd think, oh, this is the worst place in the world for it. But in reality, if you have a thermal, you can probably see something for half a mile on the ridge. And everywhere around it is like a lush forest. So if you're going and coming down to the only water in the entire area, you'd have to cross this wide open spot. So we looked at something like that, you know, trying to do a little different than, you know, just, oh, we're in the woods, so it must be here kind of thing.
Right. Thomas, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, anything you picked up that stands out to you as a possible pattern or some sort of predictability? Anything with the sighting reports that stick out in your head that kind of click?
I've had the opportunity from a friend to get at least one or two from the Big Hole area down where the Mill Creek Road runs into the Highway 43 down there on the Big Hole. And the interesting thing is the Big Hole on either side is extremely rough. We're talking it's almost a 70-degree uphill climb either side. But in the bottom, you have an old floodplain that there's a lot of grass fields, and you've got a river right there, which is a great fly fishing river when the water's high. But the interesting thing is one of the reports I've taken out of this is a road crossing, and her husband has had a sighting of one supposedly out in the field. Now, these are both middle of the night, the witching hour, as everybody likes to call it, that 1 o'clock to about 4 a.m. area. Just talking to her over the phone, the thing that I'm getting from her is that she was at 50 yards from this thing as she's driving, delivering the newspaper. The interesting thing is the little bit that I asked and the small details I asked about, she could give some sort of detail, but not a lot due to how dark it was and it's in the headlights. But the fact that when I asked her about, well, where did the hip come up or did you see this? When she said the hip, she's sitting in her vehicle. She said the hip was probably about the bumper to her eye level, give or take. And she's driving like a Toyota Camry-sized car. So you're probably about 3.5 feet off the ground, maybe 4, depending on tires and all the different stuff that some of these cars have and just their ground clearance. But it was interesting that it came up out of the bottom of the river and crossed the river. She said there was nothing in its hands, but she could definitely see the hands and give a brief description on what they looked like. It's interesting that they will cross this open territory, like the old fire areas or just grass open land, to get from one side to the other in the trees.
Yeah, Thomas, I've got to ask you too. So you've had your own personal encounters, but in the field, and Tom, you can jump in here if you've seen something of interest. What are some things you've taken away? I mean, what have you seen in the field, whether it's a track impression, some sort of anomaly? What have you seen in the field? We'll stick with Montana here. You found or have found to be compelling or really of interest, whether it's your own personal experience or in someone else's encounter experience?
Oh. Well, I had one right here, right? I'm in Livingston next to Bozeman in southwest Montana, you know, and it seems like the last place in the world. But I picked up a report from last year and they had pictures, and they said, well, we have a couple pictures I'd like to send you. And it was footprints, but it wasn't just one creature, it was two. It was a larger one, which is about 16 inches by about six, probably about seven, and the other one was smaller, probably about 13 by about six or so. And it was a couple that spend their weekends, they go out on the trails and stuff, and they have a whole app on their phone that identifies footprints, and they go out and try to identify different footprints. And they came upon these two, and they're like, nope, nope. And then all of a sudden, the woman said she got the chills, and she looked over her husband, and he looked at her, and she said, Bigfoot. And it looks like it. It's got five toes. It's just it's a nice flat print. And what the trail is, it's hardtack, but when it rains, the sides of the trail get muddy. And at one point, the bigger creature had stepped off once, and then a little farther down the trail, the small one had stepped off on the other side, and there were just two tracks. And I can understand why there's two, because the trail basically is hard packed, and normally you would never get an impression on it. So that really, you know, and that's probably 6 miles from my house, you know, and you think of in Oregon or Washington, it's, okay, that's possible. But Montana, it's a little bit different. You know, you're like, oh man, there's something right next to my house. So yeah, that made a real big impression.
Yeah, yeah, no, I bet it would. Is there anything you guys, I mean, when it comes to stick structures and things of that nature, where do you guys lie in that, personally, between the both of you and separately? I mean, how much do you take to the bank? What do you think Sasquatch is capable of, and what do you think you can maybe possibly attribute to Sasquatch behavior? Is there anything that stands out that way? Whether you've seen it or heard it, you know, I have things in my head that I've seen that I possibly attribute to a Sasquatch, but could be possibly known behavior from a known animal. Is there anything, you know, is there anything you attribute that could be a Sasquatch behavior while, you know, out in these areas?
The hard thing out here in Montana is a lot of the forests out here have been hit really hard with a beetle kill in some of the lodgepole pines. So fallen trees are everywhere. Now, so anything that we see laying over or anything like that, you have to take at like a 1% possibility that it'd be Bigfoot, a very small selection.
Yeah.
The area that Tom and I had a vocalization with rock clocks the next day and that type of thing, the trail that we were following from where we had parked, we went down and then back up. On the downhill side, there were some interesting ways that the trees and branches had been laid into this game trail, and you could tell that the game trail course went around them, but it's hard to tell. Could that have been this natural deadfall, or was this actually placed here? We
can't take
any of that really seriously unless we have something substantial to point that, okay, this could be Bigfoot. But out here with this pine beetle kill that is just everywhere out here, it's so hard to make that determination.
Oh, no, that is truly well said. You know, up here in Washington and Oregon, we had quite the winter. I mean, a tremendous amount of snow and stuff and the winds and everything. And some of the areas that I research in were unrecognizable because of the amount of wind and tree fall and just the weather we had. It was crazy. I didn't recognize some of these areas. And now these areas where there's been sightings and some possible encounters, some things that I've been partaking in. But quite honestly, I pretty much ruled out everything because you could get all sorts of it's a sort of pareidolia. You can read into it as much as you want. It can look funky, but nature does some funky things. It does some weird things, and a lot of people get stuck on the fact that they've heard something weird or maybe even seen something weird and then attribute to their sighting, and then you begin this long cycle of constant activity, which is truly just in the mind. I don't think Sasquatch is. I mean, we haven't found, we haven't proven the existence of him or him or her yet. Why would they leave a trail to their discovery? I don't buy into it a whole lot. Now, do I think some of the stick breaks and structures? Yeah, there's a possibility there. I've been working with the Olympic Project on this nesting area, and there's twists and breaks that something built these nests. And we're not saying Sasquatch built these nests, but something broke off the huckleberry in these areas and twisted the huckleberry from all sorts of heights, upwards of 9 feet sometimes and downwards to 2 feet, and brought it back to these nests. Now it looks like there's no teeth marks and something snapped these off, but we didn't see Sasquatch build these nests. And so when I hear of stick formations and glyphs particularly, I'm very reserved. I'm not on board with that yet. I haven't seen a Sasquatch do that. And so, no, it's very refreshing to hear someone like yourself, Thomas, mention that. Because, is there that 1% chance? Sure, absolutely. I walk through the woods and I snap stuff off, if I can. Sometimes I'm just walking by and I snap stuff off. Well, other hikers, bear do this. I was up at Mount St. Helens a couple years back, right at the base of Mount St. Helens, and I saw this really odd fresh tree break off a sapling, and I thought, this is odd. And I'm not just going to take a picture and walk away. No, I looked at this area, and I realized that I can see what I thought was probably an antler mark. And then I saw, after further investigation, I realized that this was an elk that had done this. I could see the elk tracks. Elk had either done on purpose or had gotten its antlers caught, its rack caught up in this sapling and then snapped it. And it was a great snap. It was way up there. But, think about the size of an elk and what they're capable of. They're very strong, much stronger than myself. And I knew instantly that that was an elk that had done that. And so, I appreciate candor and talk like that, because do I think Sasquatch is capable of doing it? Well, heck yeah. I can't rule that it was a Sasquatch. I have to rule out every known animal before I can rule in a Sasquatch. So that I appreciate that sort of talk, and that goes, kudos to you guys for saying that. There's obviously a 1% chance or whatnot, but that we're not jumping to the conclusion that it's a Sasquatch. I think guys, we're getting towards the end of the show here, but I wanted to mention something about this conference. How much feedback have you gotten from your past conferences up there in Montana, in Hamilton, Montana? I mean, you guys have I look at Finding Bigfoot. One of the things I loved about the show Finding Bigfoot was the town halls. They get a ton of reports, and they get to learn areas and whatnot. People come forth that would normally not come forth. I know you guys must have experienced this sort of behavior from other individuals, and you mentioned some of that on the show. But do you expect the same this coming conference? Because that's half the reason, I'll be honest, the majority of the reason I attend these conferences, whether I'm speaking or not, is to hear from people in certain areas that will not normally come out on Facebook, social media, or in the public, or talk about it anywhere. But at these conferences, this is their one opportunity. Do you guys experience the same thing?
Totally. Yeah, the conference kicks off at 6:30 on Friday night with a movie and presentation by Seth Breedlove. And then Tom and I are going to do a basic town hall meeting, figuring that, and this was Sarah's idea, that, people see the movie, they get hyped up and they, want to tell someone about their experiences and stuff. And then we're planning on, we're going to try to have the Google Map thing so we can, put it up on the screen and show people where the sighting is. Plus have a big laminated map you can come up and you can draw on it and stuff. And, we're definitely going to do the town hall meeting. That's always a great way to get people to talk.
Absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
Last year we had roughly 30 people come forward that didn't want to talk out loud to people either. They wanted to do it semi-private or completely private, which we have a couple people like that.
Yeah.
Somebody would be in presenting and we'd have nobody at the table. Well, then all of a sudden you'd get somebody that would wander in and they would just start opening up. I don't know how many people I talked to about that. Kind of missed out on that due to his ankle from last year, but
Yeah.
It was interesting to have somebody in presenting, somebody that you would think people would want to listen to, but rather they'd rather tell their story to somebody that wants to sit down and listen the whole entire time. That was amazing. And like I said, 30 may not sound like a lot, but when you come from a state where word of mouth and your personality and who you are is a big deal, it changes a whole perspective on what you have to think about as far as what some of these people, how they talk and how they interact with people with a questionable situation like Bigfoot.
Thomas, that is a 30 is a tremendous number in my book, and I've been witness to similar numbers at many conferences. And then you have to think about this. So you have 30 people or these 30 individuals that come forward at a conference, that attend the conference and just want to share an encounter or story or sighting off the books, off the radar.
Mm-hmm.
How many more have not done that? How many more? That 30 is a tremendous number. And then you get into, well, how many more people have not come forward or have not realized what they were around? That, to me, stands out as it's amazing.
And I think we'll see that this year is with a bigger presence that we are trying to promote with this. Like I said, I'm going to be at the Ravalli County Fair doing a free stage deal where I'm going to do a Bigfoot call contest to win some tickets to the conference in a small town hall there to try and garner some more interest and to get those people that we aren't meeting, that aren't wanting to talk, to come forward at conference or at least show up and try and set up a private meeting with us. With the county fair and conference, we could easily see our numbers go up from last year. And like you said, Shane, 30 is a great number. We were expecting maybe 10 or 15, but yeah, we nearly doubled that. So
absolutely. So Thomas, we're going to end the show here. Where can people purchase tickets to this event? And let's talk again about the venue, and where it's going to be taking place. And then, just run with that.
Okay. Tickets are available at BigSkyBigfootConference.com. That's their website. You can also go through their Facebook page, which is Big Sky Bigfoot Conference, and figure out and get the tickets through there. The other way is you can come to the county fair the Labor Day weekend in September, Labor Day weekend. We will have a table there, a booth, along with our free stage deal. You can get tickets then too. We encourage people from wherever they are to come and at least see what Montana has to hold of Bigfoot in a beautiful setting of Hamilton, Montana.
Well, fantastic. And, for myself and Gunnar Monson, who's not here this evening, we hope to make it. And, I know this is going to be a tremendous opportunity to, whether you're an enthusiast, an amateur, or someone just interested in the Bigfoot subject, this is the place to be, especially in Montana. If you're in the surrounding states or really interested in learning about what's going on out there, this unknown thing, this is the place to be. You're going to have a tremendous amount of individuals coming forth to talk about Sasquatch. You're going to have science involved, and you're going to have a chance to meet Bob Gimlin, Jeff Meldrum out of Idaho State. This is going to be a fantastic conference. I'm super excited for you guys. I know that this is going to be one of those things where it's just going to, over the years, it's going to build and build and build. But you know what? You guys are going to be sharing a lot of knowledge, experience, and know-how. And hey, people, get out to the Big Sky Conference held in Hamilton, Montana, September 22nd and 23rd. Be there. I'm looking forward to talking to you guys more about the conference and your research down the road. And I just want to thank you both for being here.
We'd like to thank you a lot for having us on.
Thanks, Shane. Thanks for having us on. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely, guys. You guys have a great evening. And just thanks again. And keep us posted on any any updates for the conference, feel free to share on Monster X Radio on our Facebook page or monsterxradio.com. We're going to promote the snot out of this because I think this is a great venue. You guys are both fantastic researchers who have, this conference going on with a bunch of great people. And so kudos to you guys. Best hopes for a great conference. Thank you.
Thanks, Shane.
Thank you. Good to see you.
This conference is going to be fantastic. And, there's a lot of conferences out there, but, Montana, this is it. This is it in the state of Montana. And you're going to hear from individuals that live it. I mean, they're out there researching. They're interacting with individuals that have had experiences, encounters, and they've done their homework. And you're not going to get bull from these guys. Straight-laced, straightforward evidence and conversation, both anecdotal and physical. And so kudos to those guys. Great conference. They got some, Dr. Jeff Meldrum. I mean, wow. He's working alongside the Link Project. He's probably going to share some stuff about the nesting site that the Link Project is working with. And if not, ask him. He's very, that's what these conferences are about. Interacting with researchers, enthusiasts, and whatnot, and scientists. So I highly recommend this event. And please, if you're in the area or not, this is going to be a great conference, peeps. So please look it up. Tickets are cheap. And, guess what? If you're taking a vacation and you want to go out to this area, conference is 2 days. You got, possible Bigfoot out your back door in these areas. And these guys will lead you in the right direction, no doubt about it. So anyways, I want to thank everybody for listening this evening again to Monster X Radio. And for myself and Gunnar Monson, we say squatch on. Have a great week, and we'll see you next Sunday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. And we just thank you again for joining us.